Welcome to the Ortho Joe Show, a joint production of the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery and Ortho Evidence. In our world, orthopedic research is king, and current topics from our respective publications are analyzed weekly. Here is Mohit Bhandari from Ortho Evidence and Mark Swinkowski from the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery.
Well, good morning, Mo. Here it is. It's been a long week, so...
And it's only Tuesday, Mark. That's the question. It's only Tuesday and it's been a long week. What's
exactly,
left?
Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah, well, we're revisiting another topic we've been after before because you and I decided we needed greater depth. So some weeks ago, we had an Ortho Joe conversation about how is data redefining surgery? You and I decided that we needed some expert help to further clarify these definitions so that we can educate ourselves and then our audience as to where this whole advanced, quote, AI machine learning movement is going. So, Mo, thanks for bringing on a special guest, and I'll let you introduce Joey.
Yeah, sure. So Joey Silbert is a PhD at the University of Toronto, has done quite a bit of work in the area of machine learning, neural networks, and he joined us at Ortho Evidence. So after that particular podcast, I chatted with him quite a bit, and he had very, very clear answers to the questions that I was asking. And I thought it might be great to bring him on today, Mark, and maybe get a bit of a summary of the concepts that are machine learning, AI, deep learning, all these things I think most of our viewers and listeners are confronted with on a pretty regular basis now.
Right. And where we've seen an explosion of submissions with those analytic approaches in the titles.
Absolutely. So I wonder, Joey, first of all, welcome and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start off, if I could, and I'm sure Mark will jump in with additional follow-ups, but maybe you could start off by giving us just a broad overview of the verbiage or the nomenclature that is, you know, machine learning, AI, deep learning, and even neural networks. Maybe I'll let you kind of speak a little bit about what all this means, and then we may dig a little deeper.
Sure. So you can kind of think of it like a Venn diagram. The big overarching idea or theme is called artificial intelligence, and that is the ability to get a computer to mimic human intelligence and to make decisions by only using data. Within the big subset of artificial intelligence is a specific field called machine learning, which is usually what we're talking about when we're referring to artificial intelligence. And that is the specific task of trying to solve a problem by using data. And in particular, what defines machine learning is the ability to learn a problem more effectively or to get more accurate as you input more data. And so the machine is able to learn as it sees more examples of a specific task. Within that subset, again, is a specific kind of machine learning model or classifier, and that is a neural network. So that's one version or one type of algorithm that you can use to try to solve a specific problem in the field of machine learning.
Okay, so let me just pause for a second. So the overarching theme, again, is AI. Within AI, it's machine learning. Within machine learning, you have something called a neural network. So it all kind of filters down. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Joey, can you just clarify a point that we brought up during the last Ortho Joe meeting we had on this topic? How is this different than a simple regression analysis?
Right. So with a simple regression analysis, you are basically trying to relate some independent variable with a dependent variable. And usually you relate that with some coefficient at the end that tells you some meaning to relate the dependent variable to the independent variable to the dependent variable. So just to make that concrete, let's pretend you want to know the price of a house and you know the number of rooms in the house. You can use a linear model to say the number of rooms times 10,000 is the price of the house. And that is easy to understand to relate that dependent and independent variable. So what a neural network does is it actually stacks a number of those linear models on top of each other. So if you actually look at a very high level, you've all seen the what a neural network looked like. It's a series of circles, and you get four or five layers of these concentric circles. And these circles stacked on top of each other. Yep. If you look at each individual unit of a neural network, it's actually just a linear model.
Yeah, but Joey, like, how is that different than like classical regression, where you'd say, okay, we'll do a number of linear univariate analyses, and then we'll put it into a multivariable model. That just strikes me like it's a multivariable model.
So it is a multivariable model, but the reason why they're so powerful is that they stack on top of each other. So each individual layer you can think of like a multivariable model. And then these multivariable models are connected to each other. And with how they get connected, there's also something called an activation function. And what that does is it simply transforms the output of one multivariate model when it's inputting to the second layer. And the reason why that's so interesting is because it adds non-linearity. So while this gets a little bit more technical, ultimately what this means is you can use a neural network to stack a series of multivariate models to essentially generate any possible function. So you could use a neural network to model any, potentially any set of input information to some outcome value. That allows us the capacity, for example, to generate self-driving cars. It would be impossible to try to interpret visual information and then relate that to, let's say, how a car should interact. But you could actually process all that information and develop the set of patterns to relate that input information to the decision at the end with the neural network.
Is the value in your perception more like a supercharged version of some of the analytics that we used to do, but it does it faster and it does it, it does it almost real time, whereas we would have to, you know, spend a lot more computing power in the past to do the same things. I mean, I guess it's partly it's related to the fact that it's just an advancement on the, I could say, the mathematical models that have been used, but it's not novel new mathematical models. Is that correct?
It's not novel new mathematical models. In fact, the origins of machine learning, it goes well back into the 1990s and even earlier. And the initial name for machine learning was actually called statistical learning. But I would say it is more than just this. It is actually a major advancement. So I think to maybe explain the power a little bit better, just to go through an example, a very common machine learning algorithm might be to use a set of a deep learning model to try to define a face or identify a face. So in the first sort of layer of a five-layer neural network, the first layer is just going to be the input. And then it will just sort of process the information that's available in an image. The second layer is going to sort of merge some of that initial information as a multivariate model, and from that derive a certain set of new derived features. So the first layer might identify a set of lines, something in the face, might identify the shape of the face. And then what you can do is take those basic features and sort of merge them together. So see how those features relate to each other. And from that, you can then start to develop deeper structures of the face. So maybe the layer after that will combine a set of lines and identify that, you know, this face actually has eyes, or this face might have eyebrows, or identify specific structures in that face. And then on top of that, you can then find the interactions or the relationship between those features and build even more complex features. So you could say, actually, you notice that these two eyes are connected and that this nose is here, and that actually, when we combine all this information together, we can identify that this is the location of the face, or information like that. So the reason why neural networks are so powerful is that you can build interactions on top of interactions on top of interactions. And then it learns the correct way to do that in order to map some very raw input, such as a picture, to a very specific output, which is, let's identify a face in a picture. And that sort of capability you can't really do with traditional multivariate models.
Got it. So can I ask one broader question? You mentioned that the quality of data in is going to impact, the assessment. And so, you know, what happens, like it happened in the past as well. We've seen it with meta-analysis. We've seen it with all these other tools where, you know, they start coming out with a tool that isn't well understood by the majority of people who are consuming it. So they start believing it's the truth. So can you speak a little bit to the biases that are involved or the challenges with interpreting this sort of data? And I presume some of it just goes down to the primary data set you use.
Yeah, so this is a great point. I can tell you from my own personal experiences, there's maybe a sentiment that because machine learning is automated, that makes it not biased. But the truth is, it's actually quite the opposite. So what machine learning algorithms are really good at is learning patterns in data. So it looks at the pattern in data and it links that to some predefined right answer. The important thing that I said there is predefined right answer. So how you define the right answer will drastically embed bias within the machine learning algorithm. So let's give a concrete example of this. Let's say you're a company and you're trying to identify what makes a good employee. And what you might decide is that actually a good employee is someone who will quite often get promoted, right? And so what you might do is look at historical data and see what types of employees have been promoted. And you might notice a trend that, you know, the people who get promoted are people with brown hair or a certain kind of hair, eye color, or whatever, some set of features, right? And then you might erroneously decide that these are the features that are critical for why someone gets promoted. And you will look for those biases at any new employee. But really, all you've done is sort of embed historical bias within future decision making. And that's an important concept to understand when applying machine learning, that if you add bias into the data initially, that bias gets embedded. And it's important to correct against that.
That's a really important point for our listeners and readers to understand, that that whole possibility of embedding bias into the neural network structure. Thank you for that clarification.
I don't know if you had something else, Mark, but I just want to jump in here also and ask. So I get this idea of bias. You know, like we are chasing, you know, trying to find sources of bias in, you know, in what we would call conventional trials, conventional observational studies, and our standard analyses. The thing that I've always found interesting is that, you know, we're trying to, anytime you have a gold standard, like let's say you're trying to validate a questionnaire, right, or some truth, you have to go against what we call the criterion. What's the gold standard by which we are trying to validate a diagnostic test or the ability to diagnose something? Usually it's human. So I always find it interesting that they say that, you know, well, you know, the computer algorithm is 100% accurate, but ultimately you've based it against, you know, human judgment in terms of the actual gold standard. So if they say we have a tumor and we can identify it with, you know, X percent accuracy, well, it's as accurate as a human, right? I mean, can you get more accurate than human when the gold standard is the human making the assessment?
Yeah, so you can get better than a single human. And the way to think about this is actually, if you got 10 experts in a room, they would be more accurate than, you know, a single expert trying to analyze or make a diagnosis by themselves. And really, that's what a machine learning algorithm is doing. It's looking for very subtle patterns that may not be perceptible to human intuition. It's essentially aggregating everyone's opinion based upon how they labeled the data to try to find a set of patterns that can determine the right answer. So it is possible to do better than humans because we are, in essence, combining multiple humans in that determination. But I would say the gold standard, and you know, it has to be humans. It has to be at the end of the day, when you're feeding a neural network examples, correct examples to learn from, that has to be defined from a human. And if there's error there, or if that changes, that drastically impacts how a neural network can perform.
Well, that's been a very, very clarifying line of questions, Mo. Did you have others on your list, or?
The only other minor question I had was just the future. But if you wanted to speak to that too, I'm just curious what's coming down the pipeline in this whole area of inquiry.
What's coming down the future, particularly as it pertains to orthopedics, there are most of what I see in the literature is mostly focused on how we can use machine learning to help in preoperative planning and also perioperative treatment. So what that means is, can you look at a set of patient clinical characteristics and determine what treatment options will be the best, or determine what will work the best when you're trying to treat the patient? Alternatively, during perioperative planning, there's a lot of image-guided machine learning processes that try to give guidance to the surgeon for where they should make these incisions or where they should approach during the surgery. Or alternatively, if some issue arises, you can recommend a best course of action or things to that effect. Beyond this, actually, some of the more interesting and relevant advances in machine learning end up being sounding a little more mundane in practice. And this actually relates to how can we combine patient data that come from all these different sources, and how can we combine that into a nice, neat sort of interface that doctors can actually use and read from, and how can we take a patient chart and learn the information available in that, and then encode that within a database that, once again, doctors can have access to. And these, while they seem, you know, a little bit more not as elegant as surgery, they're actually very complicated tasks and very, very important.
But that's the whole point, right? It's like it comes back to the data. If you cannot, like, you know, you can be surrounded by, ocean water, salt water, can't drink any of it, right? You have all this data, but you can't use it. And that's usually sort of, you know, the hospital record, right? So people go on about all this data we have, but you can't use it in a meaningful way, which is interesting. Right? Thanks so much for that, Joey.
Yeah, I thought a great way to end this conversation would be for you two to talk about a recent OE publication you've done using a neural network, and just as an example for our audience.
Sure. So, Joey, do you want to speak a little bit about some of the work that we've been doing? You can speak to any of the stuff that you've been doing around developing some of these algorithms, maybe around even some of the work with developing sort of, you know, the magic quadrant work we've been doing. But anyways, I'll leave it to you.
Yeah, so much of my work at OrthoEvidence is kind of divided into two areas. So most of what I'm doing right now is focused on something called natural language processing. And that's how can we convert text into numbers, and how can we learn information from text? So what I've been doing is trying to essentially teach my computer to read orthopedic papers, to try to identify what's in the paper that makes it interesting to read, and see if I can use some of that information to automatically read the paper and identify that this might be some content that would be interesting for our users to read. On the other token, what some of the other stuff that I've been working is trying to classify impactful work. So I'm trying to develop some algorithms to, based on what companies have been publishing and based upon some other factors, try to essentially cluster them or rank them in terms of their overall interest and their overall impact by the field and by basically how we're using it. And I'm trying to present that information in a way that is easy to understand and interpret.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff going on here. I mean, one area that has been particularly interesting to me has been the area of, you know, and if you look at many of our listeners, you know, we often get historically put into categories as, well, you know, you're an expert or you're a key opinion leader on a particular topic. And when surveys are done of orthopedic surgeons in our community, they're just grouped together as though orthopedic surgeons are this monolith that all function and behave the same way. And we think it's quite different. When you have a diverse group of people listening, you just have different phenotypes. And so we've been trying to explore, you know, behavior patterns more so than just titles and descriptors like that. So trying to understand, as the gaming world does much better than all of us, you know, what types of, quote, gamers are there, you know, in the, you know, on the site? You know, are there those that are more explorative? They're just exploring new ways to do something. Are there the experts who learn from the explorers? Are there the enthusiasts who are like myself, who maybe, you know, pop into a game, do fairly horribly, but I don't have any particular, you know, I'm not watching it and I'm not doing it at, you know, 3 a.m, you know, kind of thing. So it's just, there's just different phenotypes, and we're trying to understand. It's really complex, but I think it gets closer to trying to find ways to get people the information they want, rather than just say, well, you're an orthopedic surgeon, you're a physiotherapist, you know, you're a sports med doc, therefore we'll just give you all the sports med literature, but that's not really how a lot of people behave.
That's very important work. We surely want to get people what they would like to receive from our respective publications. And as you mentioned earlier in the conversation, data is what it's all about. And we at Ortho Joe would like to have some data. We'd like to have some feedback. So it's orthojoe@jbjs.org. If you have comments or critiques, or you have a topic that you'd like us to explore, please send us an email. And Mo, Joey, thanks for a very, very clarifying episode, if you will, on this topic. I think I understand it better, and I'm quite sure that our listeners and viewers will understand it better as well. So let's finish the coffee, and Joey, your mug will be in the mail. So thanks very much for participating.
Right. Take care.
Have a good day.
Thank you. Take care.